Welcome, Curious Minds, to another deep dive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're plunging into a topic that's, well, both intellectually captivating and, frankly, a little unnerving. It's really a masterclass in how information and influence are weaponized in today's world. We're talking about the intricate interplay between what's known as reflexive control and cognitive warfare.
That's right.
And we've gathered an incredible stack of sources for you. We've got primary military doctrines out of Russia and China, cutting-edge Western defense analyses, and even a really rare historical first-person account.
It's quite the collection.
Our mission today: to unpack these concepts, understand their origins, their mechanics, see how they've actually played out in the real world, and ultimately figure out what this all means for you, right here, right now.
Indeed. And in an era just saturated with information, understanding these deliberate efforts to shape perception, to shape decision-making, it's more critical than ever, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
We'll explore how these strategies aim to influence not just what you think, but crucially, how you think, often without you even noticing it's happening.
Scary thought.
It is. We'll be drawing insights from foundational texts like military thought and, you know, cutting edge reports from the NATO Strategic Communications Center of Excellence, the Stratcom COE. That's the alliance's main hub for tackling disinformation.
Okay, let's start unpacking this with reflexive control. It's a concept, as you said, deeply rooted in Soviet and then Russian military doctrine. Where did this begin, and what's the core, almost chilling idea behind it?
Well, what's really fascinating here is its evolution. You can trace its origins back to earlier concepts like maskirovka.
Right, deception, camouflage. But more than that.
Oh, much more. Maskirovka isn't just physical camouflage. It's a much broader, really sophisticated form of military deception. It's designed to mislead an adversary about your capabilities, your intentions, your objective, everything. So, building on this, Russian doctrine, particularly in sources like OO, developed reflexive control. Think of it as a highly sophisticated form of information confrontation.
So not just lying.
Exactly. It isn't just about outright lying, which, let's face it, can often be exposed pretty easily. Instead, it's about subtly manipulating an adversary's decision-making process. How? By influencing their perception of reality.
Influencing perception.
Yeah, the core insight is that by carefully, you know, curating information or even withholding it strategically, you can lead an opponent to believe they've made an independent, rational choice.
When actually
they've just followed a path you laid out for them. It's like the ultimate puppet mastery, where the puppet genuinely thinks it's pulling its own strings.
That sounds incredibly insidious, but practically, how does that work? What are the subtle levers being pulled? Can you give us maybe a hypothetical example? How might a decision maker be steered without realizing it?
Sure. Leading Russian strategists, folks like Komov and Kislyov from the Russian Academy of Military Sciences, they lay out the core mechanics. Imagine you're trying to make a critical strategic decision, maybe about where to deploy troops.
Okay.
Reflexive control might involve subtly flooding your intelligence channels with carefully crafted reports. Maybe they exaggerate one threat, downplay another, or highlight a course of action that looks advantageous but is actually deeply flawed.
Or the opposite, hiding things.
Precisely. Or, conversely, it might involve strategically withholding that one crucial piece of information that would reveal the true picture. The goal isn't to force a decision on them.
Yeah.
It's to make them reflexively arrive at the decision you want them to make, believing it's entirely their own rational conclusion. It's like a kind of psychological judo. You use your opponent's own cognitive momentum, their biases against them. You guide them so they sort of trip over their own assumptions.
Wow. As we were digging into the material for this, one source really brought this theory to life for me. We found this remarkable 1985 interview with a KGB defector, Yuri Bezmenov.
Ah, Bezmenov. Yes.
This isn't just academic theory. This is a first-person account from someone who was actually on the inside running these kinds of operations. What did Bezmenov reveal about how these principles were put into practice back then?
Bezmenov's testimony, it's incredibly vivid. It illustrates the principles of Soviet active measures, ideological subversion, in that Cold War context. But what's striking is how eerily relevant it still feels today.
How so?
He described a long-term strategy, often spanning decades, aimed at manipulating public opinion in the West. This wasn't about conventional warfare, bombs, and tanks. It was a protracted psychological battle, designed to achieve four distinct stages.
Four stages.
Yes. First, demoralization, eroding moral values, national identity. Second, destabilization, creating societal unrest, breaking down trust. Third, crisis pushing things to a breaking point, leading to a systemic breakdown. And finally, normalization, the acceptance of a new controlled reality.
Normalization of the manipulated state.
Exactly. His account offers this chilling look at the sustained multi-generational application of these control principles, showing how profoundly you can influence a society without overt conflict, essentially changing a nation from within.
That's a profoundly long-term and patient strategy. It really makes you wonder, if this is happening decades ago, how are Western analysts now identifying and maybe countering these same techniques in our hyper-connected world?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? Western defense analysis, you look at sources like the NAFO Forum, that online community known for its pretty innovative approaches to countering Russian propaganda.
Right, the fellas.
Yeah. And also the Institute for the Study of War. They consistently highlight how Russia adapts these old doctrines for today's conflicts. They make it very clear. Reflexive control isn't some Cold War relic gathering dust.
It's active.
It's an active tool in contemporary influence operations. Analysts examine how these tactics get employed to create confusion, sow discord, gain strategic advantage. Look at the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, for example.
A key example.
Definitely. They're scrutinizing how Russia weaponizes information, not just on the physical battlefield, but in the global information space, constantly looking for those subtle manipulations Bezmenov warned about all those years ago.
So connecting this to the bigger picture then, the Western world, NATO, its allies, they've developed their own framework for understanding and, importantly, countering these challenges, often called cognitive warfare.
That's right. But it's really vital to distinguish here. This isn't about the West deploying similar offensive manipulation tactics. That's not the game.
Ah, okay. So it's different.
Yes. The focus shifts entirely. It's about building resilience within their own populations and decision-making structures. It's fundamentally a defensive posture.
So the West isn't looking to play the same manipulation game, but instead trying to build up a kind of antidote within its own societies. How challenging is that, though? Building that kind of widespread cognitive resilience, especially in open societies where information and disinformation flows so freely.
It's incredibly challenging, no question. But it's seen as absolutely paramount. Documents like The Cognitive Battlefield from the National Defense Academy of Latvia and these comprehensive reports from NATO Stratcom COE, they describe in detail how cognitive resilience is developed or how they hope to develop it.
What's the goal then?
The goal is to establish a robust baseline, protecting populations, protecting decision makers from these sophisticated influence operations. It's about strengthening the ability to critically assess information, to recognize the subtle tells of manipulation attempts, and to consciously resist them.
Like mental self-defense.
You could think of it like that, like cultivating an internal immune system for our minds, one robust enough to fend off sophisticated attacks. It means helping individuals verify sources, identify biases, question narratives, rather than just reflexively accepting them.
So we have NATO, National Defense Academies, building these frameworks for cognitive resilience. Mm. But to really understand the current threats, how these influence ops are playing out right now, We also rely heavily on analysis from organizations like SEPA, the Center for European Policy Analysis, right?
Yes, and others like them.
How do they translate this theory into, well, actionable intelligence?
They play a crucial role. Organizations like SEPA, they publish highly detailed briefs on Russian information confrontation. They provide operational analyses that link these influence tactics to their broader policy impact. For instance, the Institute for the Study of War offers a primer on Russian cognitive warfare that really dives deep into these applications.
Moving beyond just the theory.
Exactly. It moves beyond theory into the practicalities of how these campaigns are executed, sometimes daily. These analyses are crucial for informing Western counter-strategies. They help translate that theoretical understanding into practical defense measures. They're constantly trying to map the terrain of this cognitive battlefield, identify vulnerabilities, and develop strategies to protect not just military assets, but crucially, civilian populations who are increasingly the primary targets.
And it's crucial to remember, this isn't solely a Russia-West dynamic, is it? Our sources also point to Eastern interpretations of cognitive operations from other major powers. We need to talk about China here.
Yes, absolutely. Moving beyond Russia, our sources, particularly China Military Science, Zhongguo Junshi Keksu, reveal a fascinating approach. It's distinct, yet there are parallel elements to cognitive operations.
How does it differ from the Russian model?
Well, while Russia's reflexive control, as we've discussed, often focuses on manipulating an adversary's decision-making through tailored information, China's doctrine frequently emphasizes what they call the three warfares.
Three warfares.
Psychological warfare, media warfare, and legal warfare. The parallels are clear. Both approaches aim to shape the cognitive domain. That is, that mental space where perceptions, beliefs, decisions are ultimately formed.
But the tools are different.
The toolkit and the scope, yes. China integrates legal arguments, lawfare, and public opinion campaigns much more explicitly as strategic weapons alongside the psychological and media elements.
Can you break this down quickly?
Sure. Psychological warfare aims to demoralize an opponent, often through propaganda. Media warfare seeks to control narratives, both domestically and internationally, shaping public opinion. And legal warfare, or lawfare, involves using international law, domestic law, legal processes to challenge and delegitimize adversaries.
So it's broader, more institutional.
You could say that. It's often a broader, more institutionally focused form of cognitive influence, aiming to reshape the international environment itself, maybe diminish an opponent's legitimacy, rather than just influencing specific battlefield choices. It really demonstrates that this strategic interest in the cognitive domain transcends cultural divides, but it adapts to unique doctrinal foundations and, well, a different view of global power dynamics.
It's one thing to talk about all this theory, reflexive control, three warfares, but how has this actually played out in the real world? Our sources give some compelling and often pretty stark case studies.
Indeed. We see the multi-domain application of both reflexive control and these broader cognitive operations in recent conflicts. Ukraine and Georgia are prominent examples.
What do the sources say there?
Sources like the ISW Ukraine Campaign Assessments or the Jamestown Foundation's Eurasia Daily Monitor, they detail how these tactics are integrated across military, economic, and information spheres, all designed to shape the operational environment and influence international perceptions.
So give us an example from Ukraine.
Well, in Ukraine, we've seen elaborate disinformation campaigns designed specifically to sow internal discord, to erode trust in the government, and to try and fracture international support for Kyiv.
How?
This includes carefully constructed narratives about troop movements, maybe fabricated atrocities attributed to the opposing side, or even a cyber attacks that are synchronized with information releases just to amplify confusion and panic.
It's a combined arms approach, but in the information space.
That's a good way to put it. They're not just fighting on the ground, they're fighting for the narrative, fighting for the minds of their adversaries, and maybe even more importantly, the global audience, using every available channel, state media, social media, proxies to achieve those reflexive control or broader cognitive objectives.
And you mentioned it's not just confined to, say, the former Soviet spaces.
Correct. RAND did a strategic study extending Russia competing from advantageous ground, and it specifically demonstrates the export of these doctrines. Operations in Syria are a key case study mentioned.
How is it used there?
There, we saw Russia employing information campaigns to bolster the Syrian government's narrative, to discredit opposition groups, and generally influence global perceptions of that very complex conflict.
What kind of tactics?
Things like strategically releasing selective information, amplifying pro-government voices, often seeding disinformation to create ambiguity around events like chemical attacks, for instance, all designed to shape international policy decisions and public sentiment. It really shows how adaptable these influence strategies are. They can be applied in very diverse geopolitical contexts, far beyond their original doctrinal homes. It makes them a truly global challenge demanding a global understanding.
Okay, so given all this, the pervasiveness, the sophistication, what are the counter strategies? How can individuals, how can nations build resilience against these influence operations that are constantly trying to guide our thoughts?
This really raises the core defensive question, doesn't it? How do you defend against something that targets your very thought processes? The concept of cognitive defense becomes paramount here.
Cognitive defense?
Yes. Reports from institutions like FOI, that's the Swedish Defense Research Agency, when they look at Russian influence operations, they focus heavily on developing these defensive frameworks and, importantly, establishing ethical boundaries for state responses.
So it's not just about blocking things.
No, it's much more about building awareness, strengthening critical thinking skills, promoting media literacy across the whole of society, equipping individuals, you, me, everyone, to discern truth from manipulation.
So what does that mean for the listener practically?
For For you, the listener, it really means cultivating a kind of active skepticism, not cynicism, but skepticism, checking multiple sources, always questioning the origin and the intent behind a piece of information. Being aware of how your own biases, we all have them, might be exploited by these campaigns. It's not about being paranoid, but being discerning.
So it's clearly not just a military concern then. It's deeply societal. It requires a broad, civilian-focused effort that really starts at the individual level. With each of us.
Absolutely. It's fundamentally about fostering a more discerning citizenry. Understanding that pretty much every piece of information you encounter could be part of a larger influence operation, and having the tools to evaluate it critically, that's crucial now.
And beyond the individual.
Well, cognitive defense also involves strengthening democratic institutions, supporting independent, verifiable journalism, and fostering environments in schools, workplaces, online, where critical thinking is genuinely valued and encouraged. It's about building collective resilience by empowering each person to be a more active and critical consumer and, frankly, sharer of information.
Recognizing the battleground.
Exactly. Recognizing that the fight for perception and truth is ongoing, and we all actually have a role to play in protecting our own minds and the minds of our communities.
Wow. So, from the Cold War doctrines of reflexive control, where decision makers were subtly guided, almost nudged, to the modern complexities of cognitive warfare and China's three warfares, we've really seen how influencing the mind itself has become a crucial, maybe the new crucial battleground.
Mm-hmm.
This deep dive, I hope, has shown us the intricate strategies at play and their profound impact on everything from huge geopolitical conflicts right down to our daily news feeds.
And I think the core takeaway here, really beyond the specific strategies themselves, is that our minds are the new battleground. The real insight from digging into these sources isn't just that these tactics exist, but that active skepticism, that ability to question the origin and intent of information. It's now an essential survival skill for every single one of us.
A survival skill, that's quite a statement.
But I think it's accurate. Understanding these dynamics is genuinely the first step towards building robust cognitive resilience, both individually and, hopefully, collectively.
So as you go about your day, encountering countless pieces of information online, on TV, everywhere, we leave you with this provocative thought to mull over. In a world where information itself is routinely weaponized, how do we foster a society that is both open to new ideas, which is vital, and yet profoundly resilient to manipulation? How do we ensure that your decisions, ultimately, are truly your own?